White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Now everybody, come on everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by our new sponsor as of our last episode, Ken Ringer's book tour for Lorindo, the awesome book about the Auburn offensive coordinator under Shug Jordan. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, we're going to do a quick, about half-hour show tonight. We don't have a whole lot to talk about. We have a few incidentals just to catch up on, because it's been about 3 weeks, I guess, since our last episode. And so we just kind of wanted to touch bases and make sure the listeners out there realize we're still here and we're still doing shows. For Game of Thrones fans out there, we're going to be doing another little half-hour White Rocket show coming up immediately after this Wishbone show on the White Rocket podcast, which you can find at White Rocket Books or at whiterocket.podbean.com or on iTunes, just like you find our show in those places. So let's get on into it, John. We've got a few things going on in the Auburn sports world. We got to start out, I think, by talking about the most dominant program in Auburn sports right now. And what is that?
That would be the women's softball team.
Heck yeah, it would. They went out on the same day and beat Alabama and then beat Florida. I mean, you get statues for doing that, don't you?
That's pretty impressive.
You never have to pay for your meal in Auburn again, right? I mean, they just free.
They should not have to, no.
Oh, I mean, that's amazing. And they won back-to-back SEC conference championships. And with one of their best players, the Turtle, was not playing because she was hurt. And it was awesome, man. We had a great time. We were watching it. We were at a restaurant during the Alabama game, watching it on my phone. And then we were in the Alabama game, I think we were watching it on at Buffalo Wild Wings on the TV. And then later we had to watch part of it on my phone. And then we got home and watched the end of it in the living room, and it was awesome. So you can imagine having three women in my house. They're pretty excited to having women's sports be so dominant right now. It's I was saying, you know, our bat-related sports are kind of like the U.S. soccer teams. The men are kind of, and the women are kicking butt, you know?
That's right.
So that was pretty awesome. And now they're the fourth seed in the NCAA tournament, which I guess gets underway this weekend, right?
It does.
All right. So what else is going on your end there?
Not on the football side, not a whole lot else. It's the, you know, the doldrums of the off season. The biggest story probably to come out since we last broadcast was that four Auburn players were arrested, on April 30th, driving a car in downtown, a 2008 Dodge Charger in downtown Auburn, and were charged with marijuana possession. And those were, Ryan Davis, Byron Cowart, Carlton Davis, and Jeremiah Denson. Yep. And so they're still working their way through the legal process. Their hearing is July 21st. We'll know more after that. But Malzahn came out with a story the other day that said they've already worked through what their punishment's going to be on the football side, and they're working through that. So they'll probably be suspended for some portion of the Clemson game or all of the Clemson game or more than one game, depending on what happens. And it's frustrating for talented young players to do stuff like that. But, you know, I think everybody will be fine, and hopefully it's a good lesson for other people. And you think, you know, what the frustrating part was, it was right after the draft and right after the Tunsil stuff and the, you know, the stuff with the other Ole Miss players cost them a bunch of draft spots. And you'd think that people would learn from that a little bit. But
you know, when the season's coming up and you're getting ready to play a team like Clemson, highly ranked, you're trying to pull the team together, the one thing that you do not need to do, John,
smoke weed every day.
Oh, my gosh. More sound effects.
You do not need to do that. Do not take that advice. That is not helpful advice for a football team. Do not do that. Just say no. I think it was Nancy Reagan, right, who said, just say no. Don't do that.
That was Nancy Reagan.
I think it was Nancy Reagan.
I don't have facts to back this up.
But I'm pretty sure it was the First Lady.
Other than that, not a whole lot else in the offseason.
Yeah. Well, how do you think it'll affect the team not having those four guys if they miss part or all of the Clemson game? And bearing in mind, they actually got arrested. Now, remember, Nick Marshall did not get arrested. I keep trying to correct people on this. And he missed the first half of the first game. And he didn't get a ticket. Right. He didn't get to go to the media days. That was part of his – it wasn't really a part of his punishment. It was just that Gus said, that's something our leaders do, and if you don't – if you exhibit bad leadership, you don't get that as a reward. So it wasn't they were punishing him per se. It was that they were not letting him have something that should be thought of as something you earn, right? It's a distinction maybe without a difference. But so what do you suppose they'll do to these four guys, and how will it affect the team?
Well, Carlton Davis is the most important one from a football perspective. I mean, the others would all play, especially Cowart and Jeremiah Denson probably. But Carlton Davis is, you know, the starter at one of the quarterback spots and you know, one of our best players on defense. So that hurts. We got our hands full against Clemson, whether these guys play every minute or don't. And so losing them for any length of time is going to hurt, especially Carlton Davis, playing as a team with, you know, one of the best four or five offenses in the whole country, probably. So, I suspect they're going to be suspended for half or suspended for the whole game. That wouldn't shock me a bit. Again, unlike Nick Marshall, like you said, was given a ticket, they were charged with second degree marijuana possession, which is a Class A misdemeanor in Alabama. So I think their punishment's going to be more severe, but we'll see. Some of it it's going to depend on what happens when they go to court on July 21st. So,
isn't it amazing that when we think about who it'll, you know, what about this will hurt the team the most, we don't immediately say the number one recruit in the country last year?
Sure. And again, Byron Cowart may come in this year and be dominating. He may turn into who we wanted him to be last year. Some guys, it just takes a while. But if you know, right now, that guy's clearly Carlton Davis.
Yeah, he really had an amazing freshman year, and they're looking forward to more out of him. So, man, that's just is one of those things that makes you kind of sick. But that was several days ago. Let's see, Gus and the other coaches have been going around on their speaking tours, and we got some more of Gus's take on being a CEO versus being a head coach. Do you have any further, you know, insight into where he's going with that and what exactly it means, or what do you think?
No, I heard Phil Marshall discussing on his podcast a week or so ago, and he was throwing out there that he did think it had something to do with Buschamp, like you suspected at the beginning, where maybe Gus had sat down and had a discussion with Muschamp when he arrived, and Muschamp suggested some things about this is what maybe I would have done differently, or some things I see you could do. And Gus was trying to do those things. And I think Gus realized it didn't make the team better. And so now he's going away from those things and going back to the way he wanted to do things. So, and I think, you know, the other part of that theory is that maybe, you know, they didn't go up tempo as much because they were protecting the defense from Muschamp. So we'll see.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see – well, I mean, the whole team, obviously, but, I mean, I'm really curious to see what the offense does this year that's different. I mean, we kind of had a feeling all last season that it felt like the offense was handcuffing itself in some ways. I mean, some of it was just some very odd, seemingly odd play calling by Gus. And in some cases, he said, you know, that Lashley was calling plays, but I've heard other people that are close to the program saying Lashley didn't call the plays. And so he was giving him the credit when things went well just to kind of try to boost Lashley, you know. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just curious to see what the offense looks like this year in the sense of, do we go up-tempo a lot? We haven't gone up-tempo since the first year Gus came back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One of the slower teams. I mean, Alabama goes faster than us, for crying out loud. Which is,
we are one of the slower teams of college football on offense.
And just, you know, what will the strategy look like as far as, you know, we've about decided we don't like the speed sweep anymore. It just seems like that's been figured out, or that the players we have executing it. We've talked about this before in the past. Some of it's blocking on the edge. Some of it's the person carrying the ball. Some of it's the timing of the play call. I mean, there's just so many there's so many moving parts that go into it that it's hard to nail down just one thing always that's the problem. But, you know, you got to feel like with Cody Burns coaching the receivers, if nothing else, they're going to learn how to block, you know?
You like to think so. And this, there was some interesting comments by Burns the other day in one of the articles, just talking about how much we're going to depend on the freshman wide receivers.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, before we get into talking satellite camps real quick, while we're talking about Cody Burns, let me go ahead and bring up that other topic. There's a longstanding, you know, not really a rule, but kind of an unwritten rule, I guess, that Gus does not like his quarterbacks working out with private quarterback coaches. I assume he just feels like he's teaching them what he wants them to know, and he doesn't want them confused by having multiple sets of, you know, programming. It's like trying to program a Windows computer to run Windows and iOS at the same time. It's just a recipe for confusion. So I can kind of see where he's coming from on that for sure, because, I mean, you have to believe in what you're teaching. If you feel like what you're teaching isn't good enough, then why are you even, you know, teaching it, you know? So I get that. But that being said, JF3 went out on his own volition down in Florida last week. And who was he hanging out with and practicing with?
He went out and had a throwing session with Michael Vick and Michael Vick's trainer and Michael Vick's private quarterback coach.
Yeah, I wasn't aware Michael Vick was even in the NFL anymore. Is he still playing football?
He's been in the NFL for a few years as a backup. I don't think he's under contract anybody right now. But,
Okay. Well, that's an interesting thing, though, because I can kind of see some similarities in their game. You know, I mean, they both rely on being really, really quick. You know, that was always I used to tune into the Falcons games when Vic was the quarterback way more than I did before or after, just because it was like watching the Bulls with Michael Jordan. You'd see at least one time a game, you'd see something that you hadn't seen before that was pretty amazing. Like there was a Falcons playoff game where, in the playoffs, a Falcons overtime game. I'm sorry. It may have been a playoff game. There was a Falcons overtime game. And the Falcons got the ball on the first possession overtime on the 20-yard line, and Michael Vick just ran 80 yards for a touchdown. So, I mean, that, you know, that's the kind of thing I'm really hoping we get out of JF3, you know.
The interesting part about this is Malzahn came out with an article tonight and basically said he has not changed his rules about quarterback coaches, okay, and that Vick – and his guys were out there working out of their own, and JF3 basically knew him and asked if he could just show up and throw with them, and they said sure. So because Franklin wasn't paying anybody,
okay,
Malzahn was okay with it. But Franklin could not hire that quarterback coach to coach him to get better.
Nice. I like that they finessed it. Well, I was going to say see what you just did, John?
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
That you can't work out even for free, right? I mean, they can if they don't pay, if it's just they're hanging out together. That's pretty cool. I like that working out of the rationale. They asked Cody Burns. Did you see this? Reporters asked Cody Burns about Have I lost you?
No, I'm there. I'm not sure what Cody said, though.
Okay. Cody was at a speaking event, and reporters got to him, and they said, what do you think about John Franklin working out with Michael Vick and these other people? And Cody said, I love it. It shows that he's got the desire, you know, the get-go, that he wants it, that he's putting in the extra effort. He just wishes all the players were like that. That was pretty much what Cody said. And somebody asked him, well, what if your receivers wanted to work out with a coach separate from you during the break? And Cody said, basically, that would be okay as long as they know that when they get back, they're going to do it my way.
Sure.
So that was his. Those were his two responses that I really remember from several days ago. But he seemed to be very enthusiastic about it. I don't think anybody specifically asked him about Gus's view. I don't know that that actually was asked. It was more like, what do you think? And it was very interesting to hear him say, especially having been a former quarterback at Auburn, though not for, let's see, did he play? Did he ever play quarterback for? No, he competed with Chris Todd for Gus at quarterback at the beginning of 2009, and that was when he didn't win it out and he switched to receiver, famously, right?
Yes, but I feel like he played quarterback a little bit. Yeah, but he played quarterback a few plays that year.
But he has for Gus. So the point is, he should have been aware of Gus's policy, in other words.
I'm sure they've talked about it.
I'm saying even if he hasn't gone over it since he's been back this short time as coach, he would have known from when he was a quarterback at Auburn under Gus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, okay. So that was very interesting that Cody had that take on it. So, all right. Let's see. Satellite camps. This is just if I had a snoring sound effect, I'd hit it, because I mean, I agree with Gus when he basically said, "I don't care.
I don't care. It's not important to me. I don't care."
But they are going to have satellite camps now. So, what do you make of all this?
I think it's in the big picture, it's a good thing that they reversed the rule, because it's better for the athletes. Right. Especially the smaller school guys who are trying to get offers. And that's fine. And I don't care what colleges have satellite camps wherever. I don't think it makes any difference. And they aren't going to steal any recruits from Auburn if, you know, Michigan is working a camp in Atlanta or whatever. I'm not worried about that at all. Auburn is going to have a very few limited number of camp appearances. I know they're doing one in Georgia. They're doing one in the Mississippi Gulf Coast. But Gus said they're not going to go crazy. They don't care what our rivals do, what anybody else does, that they feel like they're recruiting pretty well and they got their hands on it and they don't need to have 100 of these things. So we'll see.
Yeah, I just have a hard time getting all that worked up about it. Let me see. There was a couple other things that I wanted to ask you about. What do you think about our new linebacker coming in, Neil? I'm pretty excited.
I'm very excited. Listen, the guy started in the Big Ten and was very, very productive the last couple of years. I mean, the guy's made a lot of tackles for loss. He's a lot of experience, you know, against big-time college football teams, not, you know, some guy that was at 1AA or some small school, whatever. The guy played in the Big Ten, and the guy was one of the leading tacklers in the Big Ten the last couple of years, and you know, I'm delighted, because linebacker is a position I was genuinely worried about. So, you know, I feel good about it. I think he's going to come in and make a difference right away. I think he's going to compete for a starting spot right away. And I look forward to seeing what he can do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean,
let me say this. He was 8th in the Big Ten in tackles last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was ahead of, for example, you know, a lot of guys from Ohio State and other schools that just got drafted. So
right. Yeah, everything I've been seeing about him indicates that he basically just didn't get a lot of attention playing on that Illinois team. I mean, I'll tell you how little attention that Illinois team gets. You know, they're right up the highway from me here, and we wouldn't even know they exist if not for every now and then I see somebody in Illinois jacket. They're just, I don't know what their deal is. My good buddy across the hall from me in our department is a big Illinois fan. He went there undergrad, I believe, and he just agonizes through football season. I mean, you know, he sees me agonize when we don't win the national championship, and he's agonizing about not winning more than three games or whatever. I just feel bad. So I'd love to see Illinois be good, but I'm glad they're sending us their players in the meantime. Yeah, I like the idea of a big old powerful Big Ten linebacker coming in. And by the way, speaking of linebackers, we just got verbal commitments from two very good ones.
We did. I mean, I have a longstanding rule that I'm not worried about next year's recruiting in May. But it was good to see. And I was, you know, anytime you get commits from big-time players is a good thing. So we'll see. I mean, I hope they sign next February, and I'll be happy then.
Well, it's a victory just in the sense that they had offers from other major programs, and they chose us. One of them picked us over Tennessee, who'd been coming on really strong lately. And the I saw some video of the one that committed. Was it Chandler Wooten that committed second? Another TD?
Yes.
TD was the first one, and then Chandler Wooten. And Chandler, man, he was they snapped it was a high school clip. He was back in coverage when they snapped the ball. And then the quarterback rolled to his right, and Wooten sacked him.
Mm.
Think about that. The linebacker was out in pass coverage, and when the quarterback rolled to his right about four steps, Wooten sacked him. I like that.
It's pretty good.
I want to see that looked good to me. I know that Woody Barrett, our maybe the future, right? Remember we used to call Jason Campbell the future.
Mm-hmm.
He turned out to be Woody Barrett. Still got a few grades, it looks like, to get squared away at his high school, but it looks like the coaches feel pretty safe that he's going to make it, and he'll be coming down I guess sometime this summer maybe.
Yep.
Is it going to matter at all? Is he going to figure in the competition, or do you figure he's just going to redshirt?
I hope he redshirts and has time to get his feet in the ground. I'd hate to throw it, you know, unless he's the most talented true freshman and quarterback in Auburn history, I'd hate to throw him out there against this schedule. I think it would be really damaging. But if he gets on campus and he's the best one, then they should play him and just take our lumps and roll with it. Because if you have that kind of talent, then you got to get him on the field and get some snaps and let him learn from it so that he can, in the long run, it could pay off.
Well, he looks really impressive. And I'll tell you right now, we know what we got with two of our guys, and we have a sense of what we have from Franklin. But I'll tell you right now, if Woody Barrett comes in and is anything like what I sort of suspect he's going to be, I don't think the quarterback race is done quite yet.
I think that's fair.
He could still have something to say about it.
Well, and I think that was the deal when recruiting him, is they said he knew he couldn't graduate early, and they said, you know, we're not going to make the decision until you get here and show us what you got. And so he has a chance.
Yeah.
He comes on campus and, you know, takes control and lights on, and he's on fire, then, you know, they'll give him a shot. But we'll see. I mean, again, like, whoever's the best and gives the team the best chance to win, that's who we need to play. So,
well, Stan White started his entire freshman year.
It's true.
Damian Craig played a good bit his freshman year. Jason Campbell started a few games, I believe, and played quite well on and off his freshman year, 2001. So it's not unprecedented. It is not unprecedented, but we'll see. It's just, it would be kind of unprecedented with three such highly touted guys ahead of him already in the system. That's what would be, you know, if all we had right now was a kind of a Barrett Trotter type, not to denigrate the great Barrett Trotter, but you know what I mean? Like a guy who does okay, but has obvious, you know, limitations in certain areas. And then you had Woody coming in. I'd be like, Woody may be the man.
It's true.
Imagine him jumping over three guys who will have already been on campus as long as these three combined have been. So, but we'll see. He certainly looks impressive. Let's see. You raised an interesting point here in our show notes, and I'm going to throw it back to you. You says, your feelings at this point in the offseason, are you more confident or are you less confident than you were a few months ago? Well, what do you think? Are you? How do you feel about things right now?
I think I'm more confident than I was. I know that I'm more confident than I was when the season ended.
Yeah.
Even though I, you know, the Memphis game was a good high point in the season on, I think I am more confident now just because I see, you know, where we are and who we've got and who's going to be back and who's coming in, the new players and the transfers and stuff. And I think particularly on defense, I feel pretty good about it. I mean, I think we're going to be in good shape. Offensively, still a big question mark. And the one thing I've really thought about a lot in the quarterback race in I think it's, we talked a lot about Barrett just now, but I think ultimately it's going to come down to Franklin or Sean White. And to me, the biggest difference is if Sean White is the starting quarterback, it puts a lot or puts more pressure on the wide receivers and the freshman wide receivers to play well and make plays. Because there's, you know, say 5, 6, 8 plays a game where Franklin is going to either scramble and run or keep it on an option to run, that Sean White's not ever going to do that. And on those plays, Sean White would dump it off or whatever, or complete a pass. And so those are plays that the wide receivers would have the opportunity to make a play. So it really comes down to the difference between Franklin making a play with his legs or somebody else on the team, you know, one of the fullbacks or one of the wide receivers or one of the tight ends making a play with the ball in their hands. And so for White to succeed, those other players have to step up.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's absolutely. For me, looking at this season versus last season, I take you back about a year. You know, going into the 2015 season, I was telling people, well, you know, we lose a whole lot. It seems like half our team is graduating, moving on. And that happened again this year, strangely enough. It's weird. 2 years in a row, we lose so many players. But I said, we're losing a lot of key players last year, but I kept saying it's okay because the players that we're plugging into those spots are in some cases as good or better. Well, two things happened. In some cases, they weren't as good or better. Even more importantly, I think they all got hurt.
Yes.
You know, the running backs coach made the – or I think it was him – made the point yesterday that, you know, there was an article – I know what it was. There was an article. They were talking about how they're going to use Malik Miller. And they're like, well, we might redshirt him, but if he's going to do anything to help the team, we might actually have to play him. And they're saying, because you just never know what's going to happen with running backs. He says, you know, there we were with Javon Robinson and Rock Thomas, and they're both out halfway through the second quarter of the first game.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we ended up with
Peyton Barber.
With Peyton Barber being the man. Yeah, I mean, because he was third, and both of them got hurt in the second quarter of the first game. So, Malik looked good. I know Malik got banged up a little bit on A-Day, didn't he?
I think so. But I think he's fine in the long run. So.
Well, see, the problem I have with that is whenever that happens and they say, oh, he's fine, I'm going to say 7 out of 10 times it's worse than they thought. You know, it'll be October. It'll be November. We're like, well, how come he's not back yet? Well, you know, any week now.
That A-Day injury lingered him along.
Oh, man. It just always seems that way. So anyway, my point is, to make a far too long story shorter, less long, the same things I was saying last year, I'm saying again this year, and I'm just hoping that this year it turns out to be true and they don't all get hurt and we didn't, you know, like they don't either pull a Jeremy and not be what we thought or pull a Carl and be what we thought, but get hurt immediately and miss half the season or more.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the players, I think. You know, we got the new linebacker coming in. We got these freshman receivers. We got a great defensive line. We know we got some backs. The offensive line should be okay. The defensive backs, if everybody on the defensive backfield can just stop
smoke weed every day
and get their heads on straight, and we know the kicking game is good, so I feel pretty good, John. I feel pretty good.
I feel pretty good. Again, I've told you the reasons I'm optimistic. I think I like Peyton Barber a lot, but I think over the course of, you know, 200 carries, the difference between Javon Robinson and Peyton Barber is a lot. And I think he's going to be much more productive over the course of the season and make a lot more big plays and open up the offense. And I think that, you know, those other carriers are going to go to Kerryon Johnson and Rock Thomas and maybe Miller if he needed to. But Kerryon Johnson and Rock Thomas, and I think they're going to make plays too. You know, it really comes down to the offensive tackles. Can they step up and play well and replace the guys they're replacing? And can the quarterback make plays? So, what do you think about, you know, we open with Clemson, we end with Alabama. There was a guy today who put together like a composite poll of everybody's preseason rankings to this point, and those were the top two teams. So,
yeah.
How do you feel about Clemson at this? Just we're only going to talk about Clemson. We're not going to go through the whole schedule or anything. No. But at this point, a few months from now, how do you feel?
Well, the prognosticators are already coming out and saying that we're going to win what, 6 or 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
So. I can't find my So I look at Clemson and I immediately think,
oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. Get out, Elizabeth.
So it's the big one right off the bat, and I tell you, I don't know if we're going to win it, but I just want to play well. You know, I just don't want to get blown out in it. I feel like if we can hang in that game, if our defensive line can control that offense just a little bit, just keep them under control. You know, that's why we really needed our defensive backs to all not be, you know, being arraigned on that day. So we need the defense to just keep Clemson down, keep them down a little bit, and we need that offense to click. And I think if we do, we can be respectable against Clemson. I mean, they're a great team, and it's going to be tough to be competitive with them. But I feel like we can be competitive with them if everything just really works out, you know, goes the way that it possibly could. So I don't feel like a big winning, making the big winning prediction, but I do feel like we won't be embarrassed.
Well, I mean, I think playing at home is a gigantic advantage, and I don't think that they're going to come out of week one. You know, no team plays in week one at the level of efficiency they played in their last game of the season. They're not going to come out and look the same as they did against Alabama in the championship game when they had a month to prepare. So I think, they are really good. They have a lot of talent. They're going to score points. Like you said, the offense, the defense just said, you know, a couple times maybe hold them to field goals or something. I think the biggest thing is the offense is going to have to score. I mean, you're not going to hold them to 10 points or whatever. You're going to have to score 30 to even be in the ball game with them. The other part is, again, I think that's a great motivator for the team, and I think that they'll be up for it. Here's the other question for you. I want to ask you, when was this Clemson team was, you know, finished second in the country last year. They're in the top two coming in the stadium. Who was the last team before this to be this good that came, a non-conference team that came into our stadium?
Oh, USC, right?
I mean, that we had Clemson in 2010, but they were a top 20 team and they weren't this good.
Right. Now it's got to be 2003 USC.
I think you're right. I was thinking about that today. I think it's USC too.
The 98 Virginia team was pretty good. Of course, we were pretty bad too. You know, I was going to say, in 2012, Clemson had a much better team than we did that year, and we nearly beat them in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as long as Dabo's over there on the sideline, I think we're in the game.
Easy. It's pretty good.
You've got something going on with your data thingamajiggy. Explain to the listeners how cool this is and what you're talking about and what they could be seeing.
So I've been taking these classes for my job where I'm working on doing data visualization, which basically is taking gigantic piles of statistics and making really cool informational graphics and interactive graphical things with them. The same kind of stuff if you go to a website like 538 or some of the stuff that like Bill Conley's done for SB Nation or those kind of people. And So I'm going to try and do some of that kind of stuff with the data we have about Auburn football, historical record kind of stuff, so you could settle your arguments online with people very easily. and then also some – I think if you have ideas for the best way to use this, let me know. But I think one of the other ideas is to do something kind of weekly during the season, like ball distribution, you know, who's getting – targeted with passes and like show some graphics about percentage of who, you know, would, if we're rotating quarterbacks or whatever, when they're in the game, who's getting the ball and that kind of stuff in a very graphical kind of way and not in like a texty box score kind of looking thing. So
you showed me an example of one of them where somebody had taken Game of Thrones, which is to segue into our upcoming show here in just a few minutes. And they had taken Game of Thrones and they had actually drawn made a chart where as you move the mouse around the different lines, it showed the different royal families and when people died and stuff. That was pretty – it had different colors and it curved. That was really cool.
No, I mean, my idea is that I could do something like that with basically the history of all of the SEC football programs where it would show like over the course of their history what their record was. And you could basically you could have a filter and put in like from this day to this day. And he could say, like, well, here's what everybody's record was, and here's what the record of this team against that team was. And then you could also move your mouse over the stuff and see, you know, specific game results and that kind of thing.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we're looking forward to that. I'm sure we can do that in conjunction with the War Eagle Reader, and lots of people will get to see it and stuff, so that'll be cool.
Yeah.
What about upcoming shows? I know we've talked about doing some various stuff. What do you feel comfortable telling the audience we got coming up?
Well, we've been talking to War Room Eagle. We're going to have him on to talk about Scheme at some point in the next few weeks. Very excited about that. Look forward to – so if you have questions that we should ask him, you know, let us know. I think you and I have kicked around and bringing in some other guests over the course of the summer. So if there's somebody in particular that you think we should interview or have on the show, let us know. That would be fun. And then the question is, do we want to do something fun in the preseason like we did last year where you arranged the outstanding match game thing, which was incredibly fun?
Well, it was fun. I appreciate it. But it was that was a whole lot of work doing that. That show took me days and days of prep to get it ready, but I ended up using it at Dragon Con. I had the sounds on the iPad and everything, and we did a sci-fi lit match game that went over really well at Dragon Con. So all right, so we got a whole bunch of fun stuff coming up, and of course as we get to the end of the summer, it'll be time for our two-part barbecue special, which means I got to be thinking of what the themes will be this year. We do it, I do a different, you know, TV show, movie type, you know, theme going into each one. And I would be hard pressed to outdo Masterpiece Theater and Iron Chef that I did last year. I was very proud of those two.
Iron Chef was outstanding.
That was a lot of work too, man. I work way too hard on this show, I got to tell you right now.
Well, it's all right. You're making all that money off of it. So
That's it. Yeah. That the effort that I put into last year's shows was,
and I say you,
Yes, it was. So, all right. Well, we're going to get on out of here because we have another show to do tonight, and we have to do it before our wives decide to make us sleep in our respective front yards. So, any last thoughts before we wrap up for this week?
I have one last thought I want to mention again. Our sponsor for the evening is Lorendo by Ken Ringer. And one thing I want you to think about when you think about this book is – this was a book about a one of a kind, unique person, not someone that you would encounter every day of your life. And an example, when this person graduated, when Gene Lorendo graduated from the University of Georgia in 1950, he was 29. At that point in his life, he had already played 8 years of college football, 1 year of professional basketball in the NBL, which was the forerunner of the NBA.
Yeah.
He'd served 3 years in the Coast Guard. He'd fought at Iwo Jima and Okinawa and was president in Tokyo Bay when the Japanese surrendered. And all of that was in the 11 years after he graduated high school in 1939 and 18.
I like the 8 years of college football. That's like – I don't know how you even managed to do that, but that's pretty amazing. So, yeah.
And that's before he got, you know, went on to coaching stints at Presbyterian and Georgia and Auburn and did great things at Auburn with some of those Auburn teams. So that's just a little tease in the window by Ken Ringer, available at bookstores in the Auburn metro area or elsewhere, and also available on Amazon.com.
All right. And don't forget, while you're out there, there's still a few copies of Decades of Dominance, Season of Our Dreams, and one of these days we'll do a third book. Our time is up. And we thank you for yours, and Wario, John.
Wario, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Smoke weed every day.
All right.